No, no, I'll still go back there.
I was just saying about this Vanguard. Who are you? Well, Phil Kent, CPGD. Saying about this Vanguardism. I mean, the revolutionaries, whether they were Mensheviks or nihilists or whatever they were a tiny minority in Russia. And what you do as a tiny minority, you take your message to the people. That's all that they were doing, all of them. That includes Martov. You're a vanguard. Well, you might not be a vanguard, you might be a backward element, but how do you build a mass party if you're right? Well, you have to be right, it helps, yes. That's the thing. Was he right about the way he went about building a party? In the end, when it came down to the revolution, the Bolsheviks were the largest faction of the working class. And the party that he was trying to build was a mass party, and it was built on the German Democratic Party. He didn't have a view that there was going to be a tiny minority that was going to rule Russia from above in the name of communism. The problem was, of course, it all went pear-shaped after the revolution.
But come back to what is to be done. That was, if you like, how Lenin thought that social democrats and people should organise to overthrow Tsarism. Everybody admits here, I think, that up until 1917, all the Russian social democrats, Mensheviks and Bolsheviks, thought what was on the agenda was the overthrow of Tsarism. Yeah, but what he did after he got power, he said this is now also the organisational form for workers in Western Europe to use to try to overthrow capitalism. You've been talking about Lenin standing for an open party. I mean, he approved of all these suppression of other parties, and he approved also of suppression of dissent within the communist parties. And that became what all communist parties eventually did. I'm talking about communist parties. I mean, I know you claim some sort of dissent from the old communist party, the Daily Worker Mob. But they used to accuse us of being Cold War warriors as well on the side of America. They used to say worse things about us than that. I mean, it's not a Cold War position. It's based on what happened. Let's forget what happened in Russia. What happened in Western Europe? The Bolsheviks decided they were going to introduce their form of organisation, which is a vanguard party with controlled from the top. And this is what all historic communist parties were organised like. And
it's a choice which is made. It's a choice which is made after Brest, because they haven't got after Brest they haven't got a majority, and then it's made again in relation to Italy and Germany and France, simply because of the sheer number of the people in the leaderships of the Italian, German, and French socialist parties, who quite literally and perfectly straightforwardly had been bought by capital. And so it's at that point that they begin to start exporting their party conception, but it's a party conception which has changed extraordinarily dramatically over the period 1918 to 1921. Okay, I would say straightforwardly, the change after the party conception after the change 1918 to 1921 is overwhelmingly just wrong, straightforwardly wrong. And inconsistent,
but that's historically what it was.
But it's inconsistent with what they did at any date between 1902 and 1917. And it's also actually, as far as the suppression of internal dissent is concerned, it's inconsistent with what they did between 1918 and 1920. And as far as the suppression of individual parties is concerned, pretty much all of the cases are cases which are in 1918 to 20. After 1921, they say we're going to suppress all the other parties. Yeah. But between 1918 and 1921, it's almost entirely the suppression of individual parties which are immediately connected with plans for insurrection. So it's a change, a process of change, which takes place between 1918 and 1921.
Mike's point, if you look at the development of those political parties in kind of what became the Soviet Union in Russia and the Ukraine from 1918 to 1920, there are so many of these other parties that you don't really hear about, partially because they're fairly small, but like a group called the Party for Revolutionary Communism, various groups in the Ukraine kind of orienting partially to and from the Bolsheviks, that are at least semi-Bolsheviks. Some of them come out of the Social Revolutionaries. It's all a very complicated process. So I don't really see how this narrative of saying that that opposition was banned by 1918, that doesn't seem to account for this process at all. In that there was most of these organizations ended up joining the Bolshevik Party, presumably because there was agreement on on program, or at least that we need to sit with the Civil War. So that I don't quite see how that meshes up.
Thanks. Yeah, a couple of things, John, ago. The fundamental disagreement I've got with what you're saying, Adam, is this idea of it was all an inevitability, that you start off in 1902 and you carry on to 1929 or whatever date you want, and you say, well, there's the seeds of it. And it just does not work. It really doesn't. Precisely, in terms of what Ben was saying, I mean, what we've got is now some pretty good scholarship, right? In terms of... I thought I said something funny.
I thought that was humorous. I am allowed to...
I thought we got some good scholarship. Is that a joke? I thought it was a serious point, but anyway, sorry. Anyway, no, we've got some good scholarship. I mean, if you look, I don't know if you read Lars's book, what it's... Well, okay, so I do find it very strange, given that the comrades read the damn book, that he's coming out with the same old story. And, if you've read the book, you would have thought you'd be engaging with the book. I mean, talking about Lars's book and telling us where it's wrong, because anyone who's read The Weekly Worker over the last few years, well, I don't know, since Lars's book has come out, but even before that, if you take the approach we've taken to the Bolsheviks, party democracy, what is to be done in that sense, we'll have an idea that in terms of our take on early Bolshevik history, we've taken precisely the democratic side. And we're certainly not in the position of saying, here we are in Britain, we need a party of full-time professional revolutionaries who operate underground. And nor was Lenin in 1905. Or nor was Lenin in 1917. So it doesn't work, comrade. It really doesn't work. So, okay, you quote this crime passage, which is a quote. He's quoting Kautsky, a social democrat, right? The leading member of the Second International, which Martov is an adherent of. Right, okay. What is the quote? See, you quoted it, I think you quoted it wrongly. You quoted it in the classic nonsense way. That the workers, because presumably brackets, they're too thick, right, by themselves cannot develop socialist consciousness. That is a garbled quote, right? And so therefore you quote this Swiss guy, who I've never heard of, who's obviously a twat. Right? Well, he's obviously a twat, isn't he? He's an anarcho who's coming towards the Bolsheviks, just like loads of people came towards the Bolsheviks with half-formed, idiotic ideas. He didn't understand the history of Bolshevism, seemed to have understood very little. Okay, what is Kautsky? Kautsky, not Lenin. Lenin is just quoting Kautsky. What is Kautsky saying? He's saying within the sphere of the struggle between worker and employer, the workers cannot develop socialist consciousness. In other words, what he's saying is that trade unionism, spontaneity, is not enough. That consciousness, he says, has to come from the outside, outside that sphere, not outside the working class. Karl Marx was a working class politician. Karl Kautsky was a working class politician. V.I. Lenin was a working class politician. These comrades were developing socialist ideas, but they weren't doing it in the workplace. They weren't doing it in the battle of trade union versus the employer. I mean, that's the quote. That's Kautsky, not Lenin. And if there's an original sin in that case, that the workers are so thick that they cannot develop socialist consciousness, then you go to Karl Kautsky. Well, as Martov is an adherent, one presumes, of Karl Kautsky, it does not work, comrade. And just last point I'd like to make is, look, here you are, you're in the midst of World War, right? Communications, I mean, they didn't have the internet. You know, they weren't in the sense of this is going on here, that's going on there. Their actual knowledge was pretty bloody limited, including within Russia. So, okay, revolution breaks out in Russia. What do you do? You know, February, Tsarism has fallen. The peculiar thing is that the comrades from the Mensheviks join the right wing, or what's become the right wing socialist revolutionaries, in order to carry on the war. There's mass slaughter going on in Europe. What do you do? Now, if Lenin had thought, well, it's just by ourselves, you can even then say he's justified. But given what used to exist in Germany, given the formation of the Independent Social Democrats, how many members by 1917?
It's founded in 1917. End of 1917 is probably about 200,000.
How many?
200,000.
200,000. So the German social democracy is splitting. This is not just some people are pissed off. I mean, in terms of your Martov quote, this is... Europe is the fountainhead of the Second International. It's got... Previously, it had mass organised workers' parties. So Lenin isn't going there on the basis, well, there's no workers' organisation, there's no experience. These people have been through war and horror. He leads the revolution, but he leads the revolution on the basis, at least in my argument, and, you know, I'm sure you agree with me, on the basis this will spark Germany. He's wrong. He fails. But who are the people responsible for not making it happen in Germany? It's Martov's friends. And then Martov says it's your fault. The Bolsheviks were the victims here, right? You talk about the British organising the Kornilov coup. What happens after 1917? Churchill talks about we will strangle Bolshevism in its cradle. We have armies of intervention. We have economic blockade, right? We have civil war. You know, it's not nice. But you seem to be blaming Lenin for the tragedy of the October Revolution and how it worked out into Stalinism and counter-revolution and horror. No, it's capitalism that's fundamentally responsible, and social democracy, which unfortunately, while he's a nice guy and was one of the better of them, right? Martov, in the speech you reproduce, isn't attacking the social democracy, he's attacking the Bolsheviks. So I'd say, you know, he's worth reading. You know, he's obviously a revolutionary, but sorry, in terms of if you take a side, I know what side I'm on. I'm definitely on Lenin's side. Just lastly, in terms of the 21 conditions and all the rest of it, here you are, they thought that a new revolutionary wave was going to come. And what they're saying is prepare for civil war. They were wrong, right? And in that sense, comrade, we both have the advantage of standing on shoulders. And it's very easy, sitting here in 2012, to be wise after the event. The Russian Revolution failed. Okay, what should you have done? You carry on with Martov, or whatever the Mensheviks, what would you have got? You'd have got exactly what Mike referred to, white terror with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Bolsheviks being slaughtered, hundreds of thousands of Jews being slaughtered, there would have been a horrendous terror. You would know the figures, Mike. How many people died? How many people died in Finland in the White Terror? What percentage of the working class was slaughtered?
25% of the class. Finnish working class.
Jesus.
We're not defending the Mensheviks.
What's this telling us? I don't understand.
Or Martov. I mean,
nobody's argued to the contrary. I'm absolutely puzzled.
You're doing a meeting on Martov.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's about the lessons to the working class.
You're attacking socialism.
Time, please.
It's not about the minute eye of interpretations of history. That's quite interesting. There could be lessons to be learned from that. The point is, where are we now, and what are the major points to be learned? Because I've heard lots of stuff about what you're opposed to. I mean, the speaker said that, you know, Leninism was about a vanguard party, about professional revolutionaries and so on. That Lenin said, if you left it to the intellectual development of the working class, you'd have to wait 500 years for socialism, and that's what he actually said.
Yeah,
I admit that. Kautsky, absolutely. He agreed with the same thing. They actually both, even though they took a different route, they actually had the same premise. They both actually thought that. Now, okay, given that Leninists think that the working class isn't capable of socialist consciousness, given that Kautskyish social democrats also think that the working class isn't capable of socialist consciousness and is only capable of reformist consciousness, where do we go from there? And that, to me, is the point of this. And that's why I asked the question earlier on, which nobody really seems to have answered. Given where we are in society now, given the failure of the Bolshevik Revolution, given the state capitalist history of Russia, where do we go from here? You've got a major financial crisis. You've got all the things that have been happening in the world with the banking system, with the wars and so on.
And we have a whole week of meetings about all this.
I know, but if the working class was here now, you know, more widely, rather than just us, 30 people of heavily involved politicos in a room, let's get real, if more widely the working class was here now, what would they make of this discussion? Because nobody has actually made the point about what the wider lessons actually are. Now, in fairness to the speaker, he actually did, but okay, that's the SPGB point of view. But I haven't heard from anybody else in the discussion where you go from here. Mm. I've heard a lot about, look, oh, everybody else's interpretation of the Russian Revolution was wrong. We've got some really sound academics that all of a sudden have come up with this absolutely fantastic interpretation, which has rewritten the entire thing. We've got this unique understanding that nobody else has.
Not a unique understanding.
Well, almost unique.
It's the majority understanding of historians of 20th century Russia since.
Okay, it's very particularistic and almost unique, even within the Leninist movement in some respects. But the point is, given all that, given where we are now, where do we go to?
Why
is it the case?
Why don't you tell us?
Well, I'm about to. Good. Okay. you prompted me, so I will. I mean, is it the case that you're saying, if it's not professional revolutionaries that take us forward, that it's some other form of a political party? Are you saying that the Leninist Party believes in democratic, majoritarian revolution of socialist conscious workers in that respect?
Yeah. Yes.
In the way that, okay, could you then tell us how that relates to the programme of the CPGB? Can you tell us about the platform you put before the working class? Do you say to the working class that, look, the only way to abolish capitalism is to create a revolution on a majoritarian basis that will abolish commodity production, abolish the wages system, abolish money, and create a society based on production for use? Is that what you say? Because I don't think it is.
No, it is.
And this is what I asked the question I did earlier on, and which nobody answered. I've had lots of stuff about the minutiae of 1917, but in terms of the working class, it's a meeting about that's the point.
So it's not an abstract historical discussion.
They're meaningless. That's why I mentioned Monty Python. The point of the meeting is so that you can draw lessons from your understanding of history. There's no point in discussing it otherwise. And what's Marxism if it isn't about that?
But you can't draw less.
Okay, this man here wants to say something.
Well, Emil Jacobs from the Netherlands just came here for the university, actually.
Hi.
Well, to come back to your question, I think there's a bit of a clash of perspectives here. I mean, you came with the SPGB group. I'm not sure if you're a member of the SPGB or a fellow traveller. So I can expect that from your point of view, you're expecting all the answers right here, right now. From my point of view of being the whole week here, it's just one meeting about Marco. So I think most CPGBers are here with the same mindset. So that's perhaps one answer. Question for you, John. Where is that Kautsky code coming from?
Someone else left it. Tell me, I don't know.
But Lenin quoted himself in What Is To Be Done.
Yes, no one's denying that, but he's asking where's the quote from in Korsky?
I mean, that's been paraphrased in What Is To Be Done.
It doesn't paraphrase in What Is To Be Done.
He's asking where's it from. I don't know.
It's from a criticism of the Austrian Social Democratic Party's programme, but anyway.
Okay, right. Fair enough. So, there's a question for you and you. Actually, you say that the Soviet Union wasn't capitalist because there wasn't commodity production, poor wage labour, blah, 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 blah. You're using the same argument and saying, well, there was capitalism, it was never abolished. So, there was no further deepening of that point. So this actually goes back to you. What does it mean for today? Because it goes back to the form of analysis. How do we analyze the world? So maybe we can deepen it. Well, we probably won't deepen it out today, deepen it out in the Weekly Walker or in the Socialist Standard.
Well, I was thinking of coming back next year after your fringe and doing a talk. Was Russia capitalist? anyway. Do we want to continue, or want to come back?
What's your name, guys?
Dave.
Look,
Socialist Party of Great Britain.
Okay, great. Okay, Dave. Look, in terms of this quote, I mean, I thought I'd try to clarify at least my understanding of it, and I tried to give a fuller rendition of it. I would call myself a Leninist, and if you turn around to me and said Leninists do think it's impossible for workers to develop socialist consciousness, I'd say, well, no. I would say that the Russian working class had socialist consciousness. I would argue that. Well, I would argue that. I mean, I know you're shaking your head, but I would argue that. So, I mean, I might be wrong, but that's what I would argue. I would argue that if you take the German working class, as organised in the SDP, we're not talking about every single worker, I would say it possessed socialist consciousness. The argument that Korsky's putting forward, as I understand it, to repeat, is that workers by themselves, in relationship to their employers, will not develop socialist consciousness. Does that mean workers cannot develop socialist consciousness? No, it does not. Right? So we do believe that workers can develop socialist consciousness. I believe that workers have developed socialist consciousness on a mass scale. In terms of what you're saying, as you're a member of the SPGB, we came here on the base. I mean, I listened to your introduction. You know, criticised it, we did come here on the basis to discuss Martov. If you want to discuss is Russia state capitalist or is the Soviet Union state capitalist, we would have come along and discussed that. You could then say, what relevance has that got to now, given the Soviet Union's collapse? And that's still maybe would be your criticism. I don't know, but we came here, hopefully not under false pretences. The Conway gave an opening on Martov. We've discussed Martov. Of course, we're not going to be here, unless we're here until 9 o'clock next morning, right, discussing all the ramifications in terms of the CPGB programme of what it's recommending to workers. Because if I came out in reply to Comrade Adam, and he gave an introduction on Martov, and I said, that's all very well, what's the relevance of it today? We're in the CPGB, got a programme, and we're going to the working class. I'd say that comment would turn around to me and say, why the fuck, excuse my English.
I can say that.
But, I know, I'm being facetious, I'm sorry. But why the F are you coming to this meeting then?
On Martov.
Precisely.
We don't tell lies.
Precisely, Colin. We came here to...
That wasn't quite what I said, though, was it? I didn't say you shouldn't discuss Martov. It's obvious that you should be discussing Martov. I mean, that's what the meeting's about. What I said was, he didn't seem to want to discuss the lessons from Martov.
Well,
and as
did.
A Marxist, I would expect you to... That's what I said.
To the
guy over here, I think he asked a very, very pertinent question. Well, I mean, that is a really sharp question in relation to the presentation.
Good. But
in fairness, it was.
Good. Brilliant question.
But nobody from this side answered it.
Okay.
Again.
It's 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
But, sorry.
So what time are we going to finish?
9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. Personally, because I'm tired.
Let me sum up in that case, so we can continue informing. There must be a pub or somewhere around the corner. Okay, you might be a Leninist, but we're not Kautskis or Martovians or Martovists or whatever they're called. No, I mean, when this was first published in 1938, you know, the SPGB said, "Good. This is good stuff. This is what we've been saying all along, or quite a bit, quite a bit of it." So we thought that's a good pamphlet. It's a good criticism of Bolshevism. But I think, in fact, to come back to Martov, I think you're being a bit unfair to him. I mean, he was an opponent of the First World War as an imperialist war. Even he supported the Bolshevik government during the Civil War. But even if you did that, that didn't save you, or from being a victim of what the Bolsheviks finally found themselves to do. I mean, what had happened, if you like, they'd got into power, and everybody's admitted that they made a miscalculation. Okay, you said, I mean, they were psychologically, historically, they were very unlikely to say, right, we give up, and they didn't. But they decided the opposite. They decided they were going to stay in power at all costs. And they imposed quite a brutal dictatorship. I mean, I would argue, and we would argue that in fact that led to Stalinism. It's a continuation. But I mean, your argument is that the Bolsheviks were what they were between 1905 and 1914 or later. Maybe they were, but I mean, their perspective then was a democratic Russia with a constituent assembly and an open, open political party, a social democratic party. You'd establish a democratic republic in Russia, and then you'd have political parties like in Germany and Britain. But it didn't turn out like that. I mean, that's the thing. And I think the other thing that, well, it wasn't just Martov; it was Lenin himself. They said that what is going to develop in Russia is capitalism, and that is what did develop in Russia in one form or another. You say it could have been under a military dictatorship, or Martov and the Mensheviks said it should have been under a democratic state. In fact, what it was under a one party dictatorship, which eventually evolved into a new ruling class. And Martov saw that was happening. He didn't live to see what happened, but he said, look, the Bolsheviks are in favour of a revolution led by Marty. You say they had socialist conscience. They were discontented. They wanted peace, land, and bread. Reasonable demands, but they're not. They don't amount to socialism. And maybe the Bolsheviks did have majority support. Now, I'm not sure they did, incidentally, but in the whole of Russia, they probably did in Petrograd and Moscow and some other places. They probably did have but that still wasn't a socialist programme. It was a program of peace. Okay, all credit to them. They did take Russia, or try to take Russia, out of the First World War. Land, well, they couldn't do much about that because the peasants were seizing the land anyway. And the fact that there was starvation and famine in Russia wasn't their fault. But I mean, they socialism wasn't on the agenda. Basically, that's the bottom line, if you like. That's the conclusion. But anyway, I mean, as I say, we've had this meeting now for an hour and a bit. So anyway, thank you for allowing us to organise a fringe meeting here. As I said, we'll come back next year for State Capitol.
Next year we'll debate State Capitol.